Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Olmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
All right, Blaze. Normally we are separated on the couch, but I thought the bonus pod I did with AJ a few weeks ago was so much fun. I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll bring Blaze on here and all of his hilarious jokes.
Yeah, maybe get someone on here that doesn't know hockey as well as AJ. It sounds great. So let's go.
Right.
Somebody you can dominate in this conversation. Love it.
Really, this is just going to be me talking. I brought Blaze to listen. No, but as was the case a couple weeks ago, man, like we're all hockey people. There's a lot of hockey that goes on, and this is like one of the few times a year you actually can be dialed into like most of what's happening on a given night. And there's just a lot of stuff to talk about, and we like talking about it. And instead of wasting all that, I thought we'd put it on camera again and record it and release it to the masses, because it's playoffs and why not?
And we got a day off right now. No hockey today. No hockey, no basketball today.
I didn't know what to watch. I got home from practice, and then we did the show. We get done with all that, and the series previews and all that. And I go downstairs. I don't know what to turn on. Like I don't know what to have on the TV, like even just like in the background. I was like, I've like had my mind made up for me so much for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, I know. You're so spoiled. It's just every night. It's just like, oh, cool. I'm just going to veg out and just watch hockey.
Well, in the way that they split it up this year, there was really good games on every night. Like there was a series of interest every night. And even the ones that I thought were going to end up sucking, which were going to be the West Coast, Dallas, and Edmonton. Like they both ended up going seven games. Jake Oettinger played ridiculous. Did you watch that overtime?
Yeah. I mean, Dallas had a few chances there where it was like they could have won. I think they rang one off the post. I mean, they had some chances there. That Dallas team, man, it's such ugly hockey. It's that grind up and down the boards. Like, it's just gross to watch, but it's so effective against, like, high-powered offensive teams when you just don't let them have any space in the middle of the ice and just like, yeah, let's go to the corners and fight it out.
Well, so, dude, I was watching that. I was laughing because I was having flashbacks to the bubble, and I was like, are these sons of bitches going to do this again? Are they seriously going to come out and upset the Flames and then do the same thing to Edmonton in the second round? And then I was like, there's no way. Are they really going to do this to the Avs again, and we're going to end up with a Tampa-Dallas final again because they just slog the middle? Slog? Is slog a word?
Yeah, sure. Let's go with it.
Sludge, yeah. Blaze said so ugly, but I thought they were going to pull it off for real. I was surprised Calgary came back.
Yeah, I mean, once it went into overtime, right, that's you just never know when it goes to overtime. Like, it's anybody's game. You get a tough break. You saw it with the Pens, right? Like,
yeah,
you just get a tough break, and it's over. And, you know, sometimes the better team loses. So.
Well, who was it? Oh, LA. What was it? Game five? Elaine, Edmonton.
Game five,
Edmonton
they won.
Yeah, Edmonton had just taken it to them all night long.
Yeah.
They came back, were just pressing. They got into overtime, and you could even tell LA was skating around like, we have 10 minutes worth of gas. Use all of it and try to get a goal. And they did. And like,
yep.
Edmonton probably deserved to win that game, but
that was a crazy series. I actually had LA winning that series. So I was like, when it went to game seven, I figured the Oilers were going to win it. I just wanted to, you know, be the guy that goes against the Oilers just because of Oiler well, Nation.
Dude, I can't stand them. So I went to high school with this kid. Nice kid. There's nothing wrong with like him, but he was this huge Oiler fan. And when I was in high school, when I was junior, senior, was when they were really like hitting. Well, I graduated in 2011. So I think
that's cute.
I think they, I know. I didn't want to bring that up. I didn't want to say that, but I had to for context. Because it was right around the time when they were getting all their first overalls. And he was just always such a tool about it. They got first, and oh, we got Taylor Hall, and oh, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and blah, and they just all kept sucking. And it was always, I always loved it because Oilers fans just seemed so entitled.
Yeah.
To, you know, because of all, you know, they never had to draft Wayne Gretzky. He just signed there, and you know, they had, you know, the 80s and all that shit. And it just drove me nuts that they just fell backwards into Connor McDavid. Because they were just so bad for so long.
I mean, a lot of people thought the draft was rigged because it was just like every year you're like,
dude,
sweet, Oilers are going to get the number one overall pick, or, you know, you're just like, this is ridiculous. So, but they couldn't make it work.
Yeah, it was, well, and honestly, what's crazy is I still don't really feel like they have, but the lottery, I remember the Connor McDavid one, there was all that controversy because I think, two balls went up the chute. And when they do that, there is a rule that they have to discard one and take the, you know, whichever one it is, they have to take the first one or they have to take the second. I don't remember what the rule is, but the second one was the one that landed for the Oilers. And the first one would have been, I think, for like Buffalo or something. And I saw that and I was like, yep, I knew it. I knew it. They rigged it. And then like the explanation came out after, but dude, I was so sick of it.
Is that why they don't like show the whole like picking up the balls now? Like, did you see like afterwards they released it from this year? Like you watched the show, right? The draft show.
Yep. So that's why they have to release the thing, or they have to release a video. And then if stuff like that happens, they have to like put something out saying on this draw, it pulled a double whatever and per rule. A.C. whatever. But yeah, no, it's I don't know. The whole show they do.
Yeah. Let's just talk about that real fast. The GM.
Yeah. It just kind of feels, I don't know, it's just like really low budget. And like they used to bring the into the studios and sit them on those tiny little stools.
Yeah, now it just looks like it's like ransom from a terrorist group. Like, hey, GM, sit down here. There's a guy holding a gun off screen. Like,
right.
You got to sit here through this whole thing.
Well, and they do nothing with them. They just show their live feed for 3 seconds after their team's card is pulled. And it's like, if you're going to make this into a show, like you might as well interview them, do something with them other than just have them sit there half
smiling.
That
would be awesome, right? You have all the GMs on a Zoom and just like ask questions to guys and let them have conversations. It'd be pretty interesting. I mean, those guys, I mean, the hockey knowledge that they have, it's not like they just like fell backwards into those roles, right? Like they know so much about the game. It's like, let them do it just so that there's a little bit of like understanding of what a GM goes through, right? Like I think a lot of people don't understand the pressure that's put on a GM. So
yeah,
it'd just be cool to like humanize them a little bit.
Right. The whole production has just always felt so rushed, and it's like you have everyone there, you might as well do something with them instead of just have them sitting and looking awkward. but Edmonton, LA, I don't remember what we were saying there, but yeah, it ended up being a really good series. And I don't know. There was part of me that wanted to see LA win just because, like we were saying, they just couldn't put it together with all those first round picks. And I don't know. I still think, given the fact that they have McDavid and Draisaitl, the final product that they have put together year after year, it's like, how do you mess this up this bad when you have two players that are that good? And I guess The point of all this was they've been doing this for 10 years.
They just haven't been able to put a team together that's like, I mean, they're so offensive minded as well, right? Like that's the downfall of them. And that's where I felt like with that matchup with the Kings, like the people that are still with the Kings organization have an understanding of how to win and how to get through tough games. Like they've been through these, like, you know, coming in at low seeds and beating higher seeds. Like they know what it takes. And you could kind of see it as it started out. It's like they would never felt out of the game. Like they would get down, but they would claw themselves back into those games. And you just felt like, I mean, is the oil going to be able to, you know, match what's going on? And luckily Connor McDavid, that game 7, he came out and
just set the
precedent. Oh, I mean, the first shift he went out there and railroaded somebody. And then, like, you knew it was on from him. Like, that's awesome to see from a guy like that who, you know, a lot of times is like, he plays a finesse game. He's not physical. And it's like, he came to play in that game 7.
Yeah, he was engaged. Remind, like, that Claude Giroux, Pittsburgh Penguins, I think it was like 2010 or something like that. That shift where he, opening shift, goes out and runs through Crosby, scores a goal. You know, but yeah, it's funny because of how good he is. I think you're right. Like he did kind of have that reputation of, or he does. It's one game, not to get like carried away, but like,
yeah.
I think this is the second time he's gone on to the second round after 6 or 7 years in the league already, which is also crazy, which brings me back around to something else that I wanted to talk about. And this is another thing you're going to laugh at me for, but like, there's so many players that are starting to retire and it's getting really upsetting because this is like the first wave of like real big name superstars that were like my generation of superstars that are starting to retire.
Here we go again.
And it's just really upsetting. Cause you know, like now they're talking about Bergeron. And it sounds like maybe, you know, Bergeron may be done after this season. You know, not that Dustin Brown's like a superstar, but again, you know, prominent name from this last era.
Did you see what he posted on Twitter? Is just like him hoisting the cup was his last Twitter post that I saw. I mean, I don't get a lot of feed from him, but like, that's kind of like, you know, ominous, like signs of, I might be retiring after this.
Oh
like,
no, he announced it. He announced it. He's done.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's done.
Yeah. So he's done. Yeah, Bergeron, who's the other one? Anna Getzloff. And you know,
Getzy, it's time for Getzy.
he was someone in the last probably like 2 years ago, like the bubble year, you know, before we knew it was gonna be the bubble year. That was a guy that I always thought was really interesting. That like could have been a great when the Avs were still looking for some center depth down the lineup. I was always so interested in if he was going to be willing to move. And he talked about that recently on a podcast somewhere and how, like, I guess he told for the last couple of years, he told the Anaheim management, like, if you find something that like legitimately makes us better and it's a good situation for me, I'll go. Like, obviously nothing ever happened, but I don't know. He was someone who was really good. And then the cliff just seemed really steep.
Yeah, it happened quick. And I mean, it's just one of those big physical guys that's played that game his whole life. I mean, he's got a lot of skill, but he has that physical game that wears on a guy. And as you get older, as I know, it wears on you real quick. Like, you lose that step and, you know, it's brutal. Like, it's hard when you start getting a little bit older and you're playing hockey and there's guys flying out there and you're like, oh, I remember when I used to be able to do that. You know, you got to think the game a little bit more than those young guys do. And that's what he did. But again, like the talent level now that you're starting to see from the young guys that are coming out. It's,
I mean, on his team, you can see his own team.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is, and then you're seeing a lot of older guys. Like, this is probably the first wave too, where you're starting to see big names that are going to start hitting free agency as well. So,
yeah.
You know, that's another thing that you're going to start seeing.
Dude, nobody is talking about the fact that I think Malkin's done. I think he's a
Malkin
UFA.
Is a free agent. Yep, he is.
And it really, like, it does not sound like he's going to be sticking around.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, and I think it's just one of those things. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I guess I shouldn't fully say that. But it doesn't sound like it's a surefire. He's definitely coming back. I guess it's just kind of, there's a few things up in the air. He's got an offer, but it's just an interesting situation. Crosby, 3 more years, you know, Ovechkin just re-signed. And I was going to say, when you were talking about Getzlaf, like, that's part of what makes Ovechkin so impressive, even more impressive. He's always been physical like that. And he hasn't, you know, the wall will come eventually. But the fact that he's been able to play the way that he has for this long is.
Yeah, I would put crazy. Those two players in different categories, though. Like, Getzy's a great
player. Oh, for sure. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, let's talk about the Pens real fast, though.
Yeah.
Is it finally time for the rebuild, right? Like, you have Malkin, who's on free agency. I believe Chris Letang also becomes a free agent this year, unrestricted free agent. Yep. Rust is another free agent this year. I don't know if he'll go anywhere. Do you think have they finally decided, like, we need to go full rebuild?
Well, I mean,
or do you think they still think they have a window even without, I mean, so let's say they don't sign those two guys.
I know I've heard them say, so it's going to be, it's Malkin, Rust, Ricard Raquel, Evan Rodriguez, Brian Boyle, Chris Letang, and Nathan Beaulieu, all unrestricted.
Yeah.
So I know they've always kind of had the philosophy of, if we've got Crosby and Malkin, we'll keep going for it. But again, Malkin, UFA. And I don't know if you want to let him go for nothing, and maybe they re-sign him, and I, you know, make too big of a deal. But you're getting to a point where it's like, well, you're getting close to not having Malkin and Crosby. To me, this year they pulled the Rangers in the first round, and in a situation where they don't have everything go wrong, and they get down to their third goalie, and Crosby misses two games, you know. They probably win that series. But to me, that was like, this is the perfect path for you, given your roster, given where this team is at. I thought they were set up nicely for one last run, where I thought if they got out of the first round, like we were talking about a minute ago, they're just a veteran team who's been there before. You know, we were talking about with LA. I couldn't think of who we were talking about with. who, you know, understands how they have to change their game the later they go. And I said, they just need to get out of the first round, and they pulled the perfect team to do that with. The team that has analytical flaws all over the place. They're not very deep. And it looked like Shesterkin had run out of gas. And I said, they're going to do it. And I said, and watch us end up with an Avs Pens final. And we get a Crosby McKinnon showdown. Because they, you know, they just, I thought this was their last chance to get a kick at the can.
Yeah.
And I just think you're coming into that territory where I think this year you could start getting legitimate Crosby trade deadline conversation. Because this is going to be a crazy hypothetical, I'm going to use the Abs because you and I are both sitting in Colorado. And there's the obvious McKinnon connection.
Yeah.
If you were going to try to sell off Sidney Crosby to recoup something for him, before his contract comes up in a few years and everyone kind of decides it's time for the band to break up. You would probably want to sell 2.5 years of Sidney Crosby versus every passing day after next deadline. You know what I mean? Like, and again, yeah. I'm not saying they'll trade him ever, but I'm just saying theoretically, I think you could start getting some of that media buzz this year. This might be the first year that it makes sense to maybe start the season. Let's see what this group does, whoever we have back from UFA. And then at that halfway point, if it's obvious, yep, wheels are coming off, it's time to run this thing back, I think maybe you start exploring that if Sidney Crosby's interested.
So you're kind of like the guy that likes to just pull that Band-Aid off on your like arm there with all that arm hair, just like slowly, just to feel the pain and be like, maybe, no, if it's good, instead of just ripping because, that bad boy off and starting
because
over.
I'm trying to decide if I want to go through the extra pain of having the wound exposed when it's it probably could use a day more under the Band-Aid just to see if that's going to help anymore. It's like, nah, still a little bit too wet. And then, like, I wake up in the middle of the night, get a glass of water, notice the Band-Aid's half hanging off. It's like, it's already half hanging off. Might as well just. I didn't feel the tear on the first half. It was so bad.
Oh, I mean, I'm kind of in the other camp of, I think they just need to start saying, see you later to some of these older guys. I mean, like, you've got Malkin, and he's still producing so well. I mean, the problem with him is just he's injury prone, right? Like, he misses like crazy, parts of years now. But when he's healthy, he's like a point per game player kind of guy. So it's like, I mean, $9.5 million, do you resign him or do you get a younger version? Like, what can you get for $9.5 million?
Right.
That's out there.
So are you of the opinion that if you feel you are out of Stanley Cup contention, you need to start retooling and changing what you're doing? Because I always thought about that. And I mean, the people talked about it with the Minnesota Wild for years. I mean, honestly, they're probably still kind of there. Where it's just like, you're in the middle. You're good enough to make the playoffs. You're really not, good or deep enough to contend. But you're also not drafting high enough to be like drastically improving your roster through the prospect pipeline. But like, teams do hold on because every now and then you get a St. Louis.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't happen often. But like, so are you team, if you've, and this is after you've peaked, right? Because sure. If you think you're building, you can't tear it down every year. No. If you've peaked out and you feel that you have stepped off that ledge, no sense in just continuing on.
I mean, with aging players, like if you look at that lineup and like, I don't know exactly what their age is versus other teams, but it's got to be up there because they've got some aging veterans on that team. If you don't think that you can climb that hill anymore, I mean, what are you doing? You're just, you're just basically delaying it to kind of
selling tickets.
Fan base. That's going to get more upset and more upset as they age. And then the question is like, why didn't we trade? You know, it's like rip off that Band-Aid and the fan base is going to be upset. But if you get good pieces, if you're a good GM, you got a good front office, you should be able with those pieces that you have in play. Like, obviously you have a UFA that could just walk. So that's nothing. You just get
money, I was going to say,
so you can go out.
Right.
But with Sidney Crosby still having 3 years left on his contract, I mean, that's you could probably get a good return from, some teams out there that are desperate for selling tickets, I guess. depending. Is Crosby going to want to go to a place like that?
Who knows? What do you think Vegas gives up to get Crosby?
I don't know anymore. Like, right, they fired Peter, so I wonder what they're going to be doing out there now. How do you feel about that anyways? I think it was time.
Thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, The only thing that struck me as odd was, why did they do it today? Why not 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It just, I mean, do we know weird. Anything that's going inside of that organization?
Okay, so...
Let's talk about being weird.
I want to get your opinion on this because we talked about it a little bit on the normal pod today, I think. Yeah, today. You're Barry Trotz. Bill Foley calls you, owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, or Kelly McCrimmon, GM, and says, hey, we'd love to chat with you about, you know, maybe taking over here in Vegas. Does Barry Trotz, knowing that he'll get calls from 15 teams, does he even take that interview given just the way that things are around Vegas, or is their roster good enough that you're like, yeah, I'll take that chance?
I mean, I think you have a little bit of sway there, right? When you're basically looking for a job like that, like they want you, maybe you have other options. So it's like, how much control am I going to have over decisions of players and things of that nature? Because like, I think from Barry Trotz, it's like a slam dunk, right? A team that's heading south. If I go in there and turn that team around, I am the golden coach of the Golden Vegas Knights, right? You know, like, but it's how much power am I going to have to make that happen? Like, and you want to make sure that that's being clear, right? Like, we saw this happen in Colorado where Patrick Waugh wanted to have a little bit more say in player decisions. And at that time, you know, he was given a little bit, but it was like this weird gray area where, you know, he wanted decisions made that weren't being honored. And then he felt betrayed. Like it created this rift inside of the Colorado Avalanche front office. You definitely can't have that happen in Vegas right now. So it's like, you've got to be, you know, crystal clear on what you're going to get from a head coach. I think Barry Trotz would be awesome just because of his track record and what he can do with a team that he could turn that team around with the talent that they have on it right now.
Do you think, though, the only thing that comes to my mind is he likes to play kind of like what we were saying about Dallas, very slow, very deliberate, very kind of, you know, just beat you to death.
Yeah.
And that's just very not Vegas. That's just very not what they've done. That's not like the roster they have built doesn't really fit that.
Yeah. Well, that's on,
you know,
him,
like,
right?
Like can you see Jack Eichel playing, you know, a 1-3, you know, 1-3-1 or whatever?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, again, that would be, I mean, I know his track record is like, that's what he likes to do, but being a head coach, you have to understand what pieces you have in play and then the style of play you're going to, you know, kind of make the makeup of the team. That is an interesting call there because it is like two different styles, but he's a good coach, man. I think he can get the best out of that team. And he just has that leadership that's probably needed inside the Vegas locker room right now. Jack Eichel, man, that guy, it's just like wherever he goes, coaches are fired in his wake. I'm sorry.
It is one of those, like, no, it is one of those things where, like, I dated this girl years ago, and I remember we only dated for like 6 weeks, 2 months, something like that. And I remember at some point in there, she was telling me, she's like, yeah, I don't know. I keep like, you know, whenever I meet a guy, we just like don't get along. We end up screaming and fighting and arguing. And like, I just keep meeting all these assholes. And I was sitting there, I was like, there's a common denominator here.
right.
One thing that is the same in every single one of those scenarios. And I'm talking to it. At a certain point, again, I'm not necessarily saying, I'm sure Jack Eichel's a nice enough guy, whatever. For like, you do eventually. It was like you had to do it with Matt Duchene there for a minute. It's like, dude, every roster you show up on dies. What is happening? And why is it following you around? Yeah, Jack Eichel, man, he's just hacking them down.
I'm not a big Jack Eichel fan. Excuse me. I appreciate his game. Like, he's a very talented hockey player, but just I've followed him from U18s to where he is now, and he has grown up a little bit, but when he was younger, he had an attitude on him and he liked to throw people under the bus. And you see it peak out every now and then, right? Like
the Buffalo
when things aren't going their ways. Yeah, the Buffalo thing's fine, but it's just like those comments that he says, you know, when like reporters are asking him questions, and I know that can be annoying sometimes as well, but
yeah,
there's times where he throws people under the bus instead of just being like, it's on me, you know, like I'm getting paid this money. I need to step up my game and not start throwing people under the bus. That can't like speak for themselves.
Right. The comments about the Buffalo fans, I don't know. That one just annoyed me because I bag on Matt Duchene more than most. I give the guy a ton of credit. Because you know he's had a thousand reasons that he could or a thousand excuses to take shots at Avs fans over the last couple of years. They have been pretty hostile towards him. I mean, they booed every time he touched the puck in those two games in the first round. Yeah. There was a multiple times a pretty prominent Matt Duchene sucks chant that broke out.
Yep. Oh, you could hear it on the broadcast. Yes.
Oh, I'm sure. And after the game, he gets asked about it, and he's like, "Well, they have really passionate fans. They were really great to me when they're here, or when I was here, but." You know, I'm on the other side of it now, and you know, they're just supporting their team and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that dude could have so easily been like, no, I think it's completely, you know, ridiculous and disrespectful. And, you know, I poured my heart out here, and I never heard him treat anybody like that when I was here. And but it's just like, dude, he understands how that, like Matt Duchene understands how that all went and how it all looked. You know, from the public eye, and he, you know, he just kind of rolls with the, I still got love for Colorado. If their people don't like me, you know, it's all good. Well, I get it.
Yeah. He's not a dumb kid either. Like that's the thing is like a lot of people forget that these, you know, we're talking to these like guys that are 22, 23 year olds, right? Like, I mean, you go back when I was 22, 23, I've said some dumb shit. I say dumb shit now, but you learn and you understand like, oh, okay, maybe I should have like approached this situation different. Like the whole thing was like Matt Duchene was great when he got here. It was such a great story, right? Like they drafted him. He loved the Avalanche. They showed a picture of his childhood room, which is just wall-to-wall Avalanche stuff. Yeah, colors are even Avalanche colors. It's like awesome, you know? And then he comes in and he starts like understanding the game. He's playing a pretty good game. Now, you know, he gets labeled as one of those guys that gets junk goals when it doesn't matter, but he's producing points. He's a bigger star in Colorado. And then you start getting some of these younger guns coming in that, you know, have the skill set that's a pretty even skill set that you see night after night. And he wanted out and he didn't approach it the right way. He kind of started, you know, saying things that he probably shouldn't have. And in the locker room, I guess it sounded like things weren't going very well, and he was kind of confrontational, and that just rubbed wrong, you know, especially in hockey and especially in Colorado, which, you know, you've got like role player guys that, you know, we kind of take shots at, but like Eric Johnson's a great role playing guy in the locker room and stuff. And when he comes out after the guy leaves and basically says, glad he's gone, you know, there's issues going on there, but he grew up. He grew up and he understands. He's got a kid. He's got, you know, a wife. He's gets it now. And like, he's learning life. So.
And so then I take that back to what started this conversation, Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he's not quite there yet.
If you're
him, you have to understand. Again, just how it, regardless of what the truth actually is. This is one thing that, again, I applaud about Matt Duchene. Regardless of how it actually went, what he actually said, how much he said, I don't want to be here, whatever. Regardless, he understands, look, these are passionate fans. I get why they would perceive it this way. I just kind of got to deal with it. Whatever. Like you said, he grew up. Jack Eichel, same kind of thing. It's like, regardless of what happened, there was actually a lot of people who were like very pro Jack Eichel in that whole situation. But you also have to understand, Buffalo's a very passionate hockey town. It's been bad for a long time.
Yeah.
And the way that it just kind of ended, you have to expect that. And I just, I don't know how we fully got down the Jack Eichel thing, but just really annoyed me the way that he kind of threw the temper tantrum. Oh, this is all about the coach and Barry Trotz and how that would kind of fit in with what we know Barry Trotz is. Or I mean, I don't know. I've never played for Barry Trotz, but what we know Barry Trotz to be.
Yeah, his systems of play, right? Like what he likes to see out of his players. Maybe it's not a good fit, but I don't know. I think Barry Trotz would probably look at that as like, cool, if I can get this out of the front office and I have this type of control, could be a fun one to kind of turn around. Because like you look at that franchise, it started on top and now it's starting to slide a little bit. So it's like, if you can bring it back up, you are going to be, you know, the hero of Las Vegas.
Well, and that maybe is something too, where it's like it would pour some cold water on that whole situation. Like you bring in Barry Trotz, you can have a year where it's not just chaos. There's people coming and going. You're going to lose some pieces in the off season.
You have to.
right. Well, and now it sounds like Mark Stone is having back surgery, so you know, don't know what you're going to get from him next year, and just maybe having someone that's a little bit steadier is exactly what they need.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was honestly surprised still that Barry Trotz was fired in general, but I just thought that was a really weird.
Well, it's crazy. Like how the leagues, it's crazy how the leagues changed, right? Like it used to be like, you could have a few bad years and they gave you the grace of like, hey, look, it's the ebbs and flows of hockey and talent coming in and out and like learning new systems and stuff like that. And now it's just like, I mean, I think some of it just has to do with social media and the fans, like just being able to have access to people. It's like, I can't listen to my fan base say, fire this guy for 2 years while we're trying to get it together, even though I believe in him. Like, we just have to make a change. And it's crazy. It's just, it's changed. It used to be like, seldom that coaches left their post after like 2-3 year stints or 4 year stints. Now it's like, it's basically like you've got to put up or shut up right away or else you're gone. Next guy.
Dude,
up.
I mean, there was all kinds of people calling for Jared Bednar to be fired after the 48 point year. I mean, like, yeah, it was a historically bad year, but like given the circumstances, that seems a bit harsh. Like, holy
especially
smoke.
That, like, that's the year that basically he got handed the team.
Right,
when
two weeks before. And what nobody gives him enough credit for that year too was that was the year that they did the World Cup.
Yeah.
So all of his core guys, not only did he have 2 weeks with the team, all of his core guys showed up a week late. You know, Landy and McKinnon didn't get there till halfway through camp. Matt Duchene played for Canada, who went all the way to the final. He didn't get there till preseason games had already started.
Well, I think a lot of that too is like a lot of people didn't know who Jared Bednar was. If you don't follow hockey, if you don't follow AHL, like, you know, the lower leagues, like you've never heard of him. If you had, you were like, wow, this guy's track record is insane. Like he wins at every level that he's at and he's finally getting his shot. Perfect time to bring him in. But yeah, it's again, perfect example is like after that first year, people wanted him fired and it's like, I mean, this guy didn't even get a real shot at it. Like he was just given a team and it's like, figure it out. And that was a team that was, in transition as well. So.
Oh, for sure. Well, but I think you make a good point about social media. Just because when you think about it, this is something I talked to my mom about a bunch. Cause she always says, oh, things are so much worse now. I'm like, no, but you just are now you get a notification about how bad things are. And so it is just funny because like it used to be so easy for teams, businesses, whoever to make decisions and never have to hear feedback about it if they didn't want to, if they didn't want to seek out a focus group or deliberate feedback. But now it's like, we'll tell you what we think all day, every day, about every single thing, all of the time.
Yeah.
And you just can't. Your social media team can only be added so many times.
Right. Well, and then like, yeah, back in the day, right? Like, I don't want to make this like the back in the day pod, but like the only way that the GMs like would start to figure it out was like when people started throwing jerseys on the ice was like,
right, oh, right, right, right.
Yeah, like the fan base is upset, you know, booing after games. I've been to a few Oiler games where the Oilers crowd was booing their own team, where it's just like unreal, hilarious, but unreal at the same time.
That was another thing that became weirdly commonplace the last couple of years for a couple of those Canadian teams was there was jerseys on the ice every night.
Yeah.
Like, again, they used to be that was a big deal. Whoa, someone threw a jersey on the ice. There was a night in Edmonton like two seasons ago where there was like five jerseys on the ice. So these people are just throwing $300 away on a nightly basis.
Yeah. Rich people, I guess. I mean, those jerseys are crazy. My kid like wanted a jersey and he was like, can you get me one? I was like, go look at the price tag and then let me know.
Well, and the craziest part too is like, yeah, Adidas is like the cheapest they've ever been too.
$229.
Mm-hmm. They used to be, I think an authentic one used to be like $280 or $290. Crazy.
That's insane. The quality of theirs versus like the Adidas is a good quality jersey, I think.
Yeah. No, they're real nice. I was really skeptical a couple years ago with all the dots. I thought the dots were really weird, but now like jerseys without the dots, I think look really weird. Without the speckled mesh. Shoulders. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I know I wanted to go like, I was shocked. Like I was going to go get one of those North American Young Guns jerseys. And then the price, I was just like, whoa, yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, I did pick one of those up. I couldn't not, they were so, that's like one of the best looking jerseys I've ever seen. They did such a good job.
Oh, the logo is so sick. I mean, the jersey itself is just beautiful too. Love that jersey.
No, it's the colors are perfect. Did you watch the game sevens this weekend?
I did. Yep.
Pretty crazy.
You want to talk about
what was it?
Yeah.
Five. Just five. The fact that there were that many, the fact that I can refer to them as the game sevens.
How about there hasn't been this many game sevens since 1992? 30 years.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And you know what's crazy about it too is like that the games weren't like the early on games weren't close.
The games sucked. A lot
of close games. Yeah, they'd just go back and forth. It was unreal. Like I was like, this kind of sucks as far as hockey goes. Now, as it gets later on, when you're starting to talk game five, game six, game seven, they get more interesting because then you're starting to talk about elimination games. So it gets a little bit funner to watch.
The Tampa Toronto series was the one for me where it was like Andre Vasilevskiy and Jack Campbell were just trading off like Vezina performances and getting blown out. Vezina performance, yeah. Get blown out. Like it was the weirdest series. And then to your point, game six and seven were like both these phenomenal games down to the wire, down to the last minute. And it seemed like almost every series was like that, except for Dallas Calgary. That one was just super low scoring the whole way through.
How about that game seven though? That game seven was all Ottinger.
Oh, and then dude. It was
Calgary dominating. I know we talked about it earlier, but go ahead.
No. Did you watch all of it or most of it?
Yeah. I watched all
of
it.
So I just. His play, goalies are so fun to watch in games like that because you can literally see it progressing as they're getting more and more and more dialed in, and their saves become a little bit more spectacular and a little bit more spectacular. But like at the same time, their body language becomes calmer. Yeah. Like that save that he made, I don't remember if it was right at the end of the third or in overtime, but on Gaudreau. It was a rebound from the slot, and it was a glove save. There was like kind of a scramble. Yeah. There was like kind of a scramble in front of the net. The puck kicked out. I mean, Gaudreau had, almost the full 4x6, and he just reached up, caught it, and like brought it down. Literally, just so calm, so collected, And it's just so fun to watch them get, watch a goalie get into a game like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's an awesome, awesome way to, I mean, it would have been amazing for them to win the series because like basically that's Ottinger winning that whole thing for you. Cause like they had no business really being in that game. If you, you know, you watch it, Calgary had a lot of chances. Now they were gripping their sticks pretty tightly because you're going against a goalie that is just on fire. So you're seeing them trying to pick corners and they're shooting a lot of pucks wide and just, you know, fluffing on shots that usually they would be putting in. I there was one rebound where it came out and it, I guess the puck just wouldn't sit down. I can't remember who was out front, but just all he had to do is tap that puck in and he missed the net.
All right, so I'm so glad you brought this up because I was watching that and you could tell everything you just said. They were getting frustrated. And I talked about it a couple years ago in the bubble when the Avs were playing Arizona and they were playing against Darcy Kemper and getting really frustrated in those first couple games. And I remember talking, I don't remember if it was on a pod or if I tweeted it out, whatever. I said, they're not, when you get frustrated like that in hockey, you don't take better shots. You just take harder shots.
Yeah.
And you're really not shooting at anything anymore. Or like you said, you're trying to pick a perfect corner and you end up just causing more problems for yourself. And there was a replay late in the third. I want to say it was Lindholm for Calgary. Took a shot and they showed the slow-mo of it and literally halfway or not even halfway as he's on like the backswing, he puts his head down and he closes his eyes. I'm like, this dude's not even looking at the net. He's just bearing down, closing his eyes and swinging as hard as he can to try to just like put this puck through Andre. And it literally just hit him like right in the chest, swallowed it up. And I was just like, you're never going to score a goal shooting like that. Like you're never going to happen.
Milan Lucic does that a lot coming down the line on the wing. But you can forgive him.
Yeah. I was going to say that's all he's got.
Yeah.
So all the game sevens turned out to be really good. We didn't get like the fucking Phoenix Suns. What happened to them in their game seven? What? So it was what? Two overtimes.
So you had New then, York Pens.
Yep. Yeah,
that was an overtime OT game.
Dallas Calgary. Calgary overtime.
Dallas. Yeah. Who else do we have?
Tampa Toronto was 2-1 regulation. Yeah. And then I think
good game.
Yeah. Great game. Edmonton LA, I think was what? 3. Oh, no, it was a shutout. 2-0. 2-0 shutout.
Yeah.
I think, that Tampa Toronto game seven, man. I, again, there's another one I talked about today on the show there. Tampa's just poise in that last 10 minutes when Toronto's just pressing, 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 pressing. Tampa, they never looked like they were running around. They never scrambled and got themselves out of – they didn't do anything. If Toronto was going to score, Toronto had to earn it. Tampa wasn't going to – you know, they weren't going to make the mistake themselves. They weren't going to shoot themselves in the –
Yeah, in the defensive zone, they just boxed in basically home plate, right? Like, they stacked that home plate and were like, yeah, go ahead and shoot from the outside. If you can get it, congratulations. Especially when, you know, you've got a world-class goaltender, you can do that type of stuff.
Yeah.
They are so good. They've won 9 straight playoff series now. Is that what it is?
Yeah, 9.
Unreal. Unreal. So they understand how to win.
Andrei Vasilevsky, 17-0 following a playoff loss.
Yeah.
Again,
that's another team. I actually picked the Lightning to come out of that round.
I had them in 7.
Yeah. It just felt like it was not a good matchup for the Leafs. Like anyone but them, and they would have came out of the first round.
Yep, I got a buddy who lives in Toronto, huge Leaf fan, and you know, I was talking to him, and he was kind of saying the same thing. He's like, "What do you do?
Yeah,
what do you do? Like you yeah. pull Tampa in the first round, and you know, I picked Tampa in seven because I said if this gets to seven games, Tampa is stronger mentally, and they will be able to handle that moment better than Toronto will.
Yeah.
And
Go ahead.
Well, it's reminded me a lot of the Avs in that game for the Avs this season. For the first time, I'm not saying Tampa reminds me of the Avs. I'm saying the Avs are kind of reminding me of Tampa this year. In that game four, Philip Forsberg scores to make it 3-2 on the road, desperate team. Could have easily been like, you know what? We don't have it tonight. Let's get home, get rested, sleep in our own beds, wrap it up in game five. And there was no panic in their game. They just kind of kept doing what they were doing. Devon Taves comes down, scores a goal, and like big goal. Nashville's, you know, jumping into the glass, dogpiling, all stuff. And Devon Taves gives like a little fist pump. And he's like, I knew it would go in. And that was how Tampa looked last night or two nights ago, whatever it was. Like, I wasn't too worried about it. I knew we'd hold on.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the mindset you need to be in the playoffs. Like, you know, let's talk about Avalanche last year. There's a game where they go down against Vegas and it's like, okay, well, we'll just go home. We'll get game four, at that point.
Yeah.
We'll be up 3-1. And you can't do that. You don't have that luxury in the playoffs to think that, oh, we'll just, you know, we'll turn it back on, or this team, we can beat them the next night. Right. Like, that's a bad mindset to be in during the playoffs. And the teams with killer instincts understand that. And I think that's where you have the Avs this year, is like they've been through it. They've been through the process of being eliminated a bunch of times in the second round. And I think that's on their mind, that we're not going to do the same thing that we've done in the past moving forward.
It looks like it's finally being drilled into them. And on the flip side of that, to your point of like, you can't let teams with the killer instinct get that bit of momentum, because Toronto had them on the ropes. They had them on the ropes in game six, and they take two high sticking penalties. Whatever you think about the high sticking penalties, the first one looks like it maybe would have missed him, or it maybe could have missed him, but I don't want to necessarily relitigate that. The head snap thing. He got him in the shoulder. The shoulder pad came up. Anybody's natural instinct would be to throw your head back. But, you know, they end up putting themselves in a 5-on-3. And I knew it. I said, they kill the 5-on-3, they'll get out of this game.
Yeah.
If they can kill the 5-on-3, I believe they'll hold on for the rest of this game and the series is done. I said, but if Tampa scores to tie it, they're going to come back and win. And then Toronto can't handle it in game seven.
Yeah.
And because they did exactly what you just said, you can't do, they gave Tampa, a team with that killer instinct, they gave them an opening this big. It's like, dope, all we needed. And now we know how to close this out.
That's so funny that you said that, because I was watching that game with my son and I said the same thing. I was like, if they score here, like, they're going to win the series. And my son's like, well, how can you tell? And I was like, because like this is the straw that breaks the camel's back right here for Toronto. And it's just the media is harsh up there. There's like mind games going on with the players. Like, they've been, you know, they've been bitten by this in the past already a few times, and they're starting to get that as like they choke in the playoffs, and that stuff just creeps into the players. As much as they want to block it out, it's still just sitting back there.
When you have a losing culture, and I think Toronto is getting there. And again, this is something the Avs have had to fight through, you know, for the last, since 2007. It's hard to break that cycle and that small little voice in the back of your head. But the reason that you could tell that 5-on-3 meant the series was because you saw the look on their face that they all said, damn it, this is how it happens.
I think that's the game, right, where they panned over to Austin Matthews. Yeah, they panned over to Austin Matthews, who was on the bench. And when that goal went in, he just put his head down right on the boards. And you're just like, that's your leader right there. That's not good.
Right. And when you're a franchise like that, and you know, we saw it with the Avs for 15 years. We've seen it with the Broncos here in Denver the last five years. You find ways to lose, and everyone, the fans, the GM, the coaches, the players, you're waiting for it. I remember watching this documentary about the Cubs. It was the one with the, why can't I ever remember his name? The kid who reached over and broke up the foul ball play.
I can't remember his name, but I know what you're talking about. Yes.
It doesn't matter. But there's a 30, excuse me, there's a 30 for 30 on it. And
that guy had to move out of Chicago.
Yeah, dude. The best part was he moved to Florida, which is, I think he moved to Miami and they were playing the Marlins in that game. And so he ended up moving to the city where the opposing team was from in that game. Which I just saw but there's a fan that they interview who was at those games or at the game, and he was filming it on a camcorder. And he said, you know, cause that was before they had broken the curse. And he talks about how there was a nervous energy and everyone was just really on edge because how could this finally be happening? How could it finally be true? And they brought in someone, I think like Billy Mack or something like that, to sing for the seventh inning stretch. And instead of root for the Cubbies, he said root for the champs. And he said that there were a bunch of people in the stands. Like, why did he say that? Why would he say that? Why would he say it and potentially jinx it? And it was right after that all this stuff happened. The play happens, you know, at the wall, and they don't get the out, and they, you know, the Cubs end up blowing the game. Everyone in the stands was waiting for something to happen to ruin the game. And the Maple Leafs have the same thing that's following them around right now. The fans, everyone in the building was waiting. I guess that one was in Tampa, but you know what I'm saying? Everyone who's a Leaf fan was waiting for the moment that things went wrong and they couldn't close out the game. And as soon as the arm went up for the second penalty, the players felt it, the coaches felt it, and everybody that's Toronto Maple Leaf felt it. This is it. We won't be able to close out this game, and then we won't win game seven.
Yeah. The worst thing that you could do is overreact to this and start trading pieces right now. I think that team is good. I think it is just a mindset thing. I think they have a great setup over there. Like, I wouldn't touch a thing. It's just like, get some sports psychologist in there and start having some, like, you know, off season, let's talk about what's going on in our head when we're playing games type of, you know, meetings.
And this is the first time I think I feel like that about that Toronto group.
Yeah.
I think a bunch of their past teams, it's been like, I don't know, something maybe needs to change. I think this is the first year where it's like, you can hang your hat on that series and say, we pulled the 2-time defending champs. And, you know, lost by one in game seven. It's a heartbreaking loss again, but you didn't blow a 3-1 lead to Montreal.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
You got a good goalie too. So
yeah. If they can keep him, he's also a UFA.
Is he a UFA? What is his price?
That's, he's pretty low, and actually, I heard today on 32 Thoughts Friedman saying that he heard the offer was like, and I don't remember the exact number, but like in the ballpark of $3 million. It's like two or three years, $3 million. Yeah, I think he fell apart so much in the back half that.
Yeah, UFA, his let's see here, his cap hit. Salary 1.8, cap hits 1.65.
That, so is three cheap. Is a nice little raise for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blaze, let's do this again this week. I've got to run and pick up Hannah from the light rail, but let's do this again, dude. This went exactly as I hoped. I always love you and I start getting to like some real good hockey conversations, and we have to do an ad read and all that stuff. So yeah, let's just keep doing this.
Yeah, no, this was fun. So
cool. No, dude, thank you for taking the time out. I was giving you shit before we started. I forget all the time that you're a hockey parent and like you have almost nothing for free time. So thanks for sparing a few minutes for little old me.
Oh, there's a little bit of a gap for a little bit, and then hockey starts back up this summer with workouts and everything for next year. So, yeah.
There you go. Cool. I think I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep. Tomorrow. Well, are you coming in or you're covering the game, aren't you?
Yeah, but I think I'll be doing a little bit of both. I think I'll be
okay.
Pre and post or pre or post. I'm not really sure. I'll be around though.
Sweet. Yeah, I'll be there. Cool.
Sweet. Jesse and Blaze, thanks guys so much for listening. Sticking around almost an hour today, and we will talk to you guys more tomorrow.